Welcome to What Are You Sporting About Podcast, a podcast about business, employment, sports, and entertainment to help educate, support, and guide you to your next level. Here's your host, attorney Savania DeBarros.
Hello, everybody. I'm Savania DeBarros, the protector of athletes and also the founding and principal attorney of the S.L. DeBarros Law Firm. I am coming to you today for a very necessary conversation with some amazing and dominating women in actually a lot of different industries here today. So we are going to have a conversation on something that is not really talked about often, but it is said passively to each other. So we are checking in on our strong friends today. Whether you are a strong friend or you know someone who's a strong friend, I want you right now to share this link to this live, send it to them, tell them to join right now so their voice can be heard on this broadcast today. So I want to introduce my guest. We're going to start to my right. So we have Dr. Shanika Jones, and she is a restorative justice expert. So I'm going to let her come in and talk a little bit more about what she does and then also plug her business so you guys can follow her.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Jones. I'm truly grateful to be here. I feel like I'm testifying in church. That's the preacher kid in me. But I'm truly thankful to be here this morning, this afternoon, in regards to the conversation about being a strong friend. And as Attorney DeBarros have shared, I am a restorative justice expert, not just in the field of education, but restorative justice as a way of life. And so you can follow me on Instagram at Purple Path by Dr. J. And I'm passing it back to you, Attorney DeBarros.
Good, good, good. So I'm going to go down from there. We have Miss Jada Coggins, who is a former basketball athlete and also a current basketball coach. Jada, tell us a little bit about what you got going on and I guess what you're going to be doing after this.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Piggybacking on Dr. Jones, giving honor to God for the opportunity. And Dr. DeBarros, thank you so much for allowing me to be here and sit in. As you mentioned, I played basketball for a couple years at Jacksonville State. My career was short-lived due to injury, tore my ACL, and just kind of trying to find a sense of self after navigating the life as an athlete and then not. So I recognize there's a disconnect there. And I started my company, Journeying Onward. You can like us on Facebook. Our mission and motive is to activate self-awareness within athletic communities. My Instagram, if you want to follow along, is journey.jada7. And I will pass it back to you.
Well, let me correct something. I'm not an actual doctor, but I do have a Juris Doctorate. So maybe she's speaking something into the future,
guys. Yeah.
So last but certainly not least, Miss Patrice Perkins. We've actually done business together. I really, really admire this young lady. Patrice, tell people about what you got going on, what your business is, and how they can also connect with you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Patrice, and I am the founder and principal attorney at Creative Genius Law. We are a business, new media, and intellectual property law firm for creatives. So that is what I do day in and day out. I am very honored to be here for this conversation. It's such an important one that we need to have. If you guys want to stay connected with me, you can follow me on creative_ESQ on Instagram, or you can follow the firm at Creative Genius Law on Instagram.
Yes, yes, yes. So as you guys know, we have an amazing panel today. And I just want to show some love to our audience who's chiming in. We have Makita. I hope I said your name correct. Good afternoon, ladies. She's also saying, hi, sis. I think that was to you, Jada, was it?
Hello. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Hello. Dr. Jones. Okay. Lisa Jenkins, she says, hello. Shante, she says, come on, expert Dr. Jones. That's yes. Right, she is. And my cousin Kavana Means. Kavana is actually a musician, artist, a singer. So you guys definitely follow her as well. Thank you guys so much for joining us. One thing that I noticed on this panel is that we all own our own businesses and brands. And sometimes people may say or think that you have to be a strong person in order to do that, because there's so much that is involved with creating something and making sure that it's prosperous, that it actually will sustain the test of time, like all of the pains and everything. So my first question for you guys is, do you think that you are a strong woman? Anybody can answer first. I don't care.
Oh, we. I'll kick us off. I'm gonna always be the one to go against the grain. And let me say real quick, hey, Patrice. But no, I'm not. I am to a certain extent in terms of the amount of responsibilities. But what I've learned in since the pandemic is that I'm walking away from trying to be superwoman, because I found myself depleted, depressed, all the D's you could possibly think of. And so as much as I would love to be the strong woman that I know I can be and how God has created me to be, I honor that. But I also have to learn that healthy boundaries will also mean saying no to the things that my heart may desire, but my mind and my body is not in cohesion with that. So no, I'm not the strong woman.
Yeah. And for me, I'll say it depends on what day of the week you ask me. Monday, I might feel real strong. Wednesday, today, I might be, you know, feel like I'm not. So it really depends on what day of the week you ask me. And you mentioned us being entrepreneurs. You know, I learned through this journey that I need to let go of that need to be as strong as I thought I was before the journey.
Mm-hmm. Piggybacking on both, I agree. I think that it depends on the day. And I think that the definition of strength, we could redefine what that means. Mm-hmm. I think that everybody has strengths in their own ways, but can piggyback off of Dr. Jones saying, you know, sometimes we overextend ourselves or try to make ourselves strong in the way, especially as leaders, that we think we're supposed to be. So I think that I am a strong woman. I think every woman is strong in some facets, but I think it's okay to not be strong. It doesn't mean that you're weak.
I love all of that. Like, really love it. I want to unpack it a little bit. So one of the things that Dr. Jones introduced was setting proper boundaries. So if we think generally, or me thinking generally about the ideal of a strong woman, and especially for us on this panel, a strong Black woman, how that has been defined and re-perpetuated into our community, into society, and also has been the backdrop of multiple stereotypes that have been created around Black women. Somewhere along the lines, the boundary setting has gotten lost in that process, where we don't ourselves understand how to properly set those boundaries, not just for people on the outside of us, but also for ourselves. Like Dr. Jones, you meant about having to say no, even if it's something that you may have wanted to do, but it just wouldn't be the right thing for you in that moment. I believe that sometimes women especially feel that they have to take on everything. Women generally have multiple roles. We are expected to do multiple things, and often at one time. We're expected to keep the house, raise the kids, you know, even work. You know, I mean, that wasn't always the situation back in the day. Women were expected to definitely keep the house and definitely keep the kids. And if we move further back into historical times, women were also the hunters and gatherers. They were the ones who were maintaining that family structure. So how can we actually set those proper boundaries for ourselves, because they will look different for every woman? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I honestly believe it comes with a spirit of discernment. Each day requires a different form of me, especially being a mother of five, a wife, a full-time caretaker now of my mother. And one of the things I'm learning is to listen to that voice, that voice that tells me I have to push myself beyond the scope of my services or the scope of what I'm able to do. Who voices that I'm hearing? And most times it's either the child in me, the 15-year-old girl who felt depleted, the 15-year-old girl who was disappointed, or the person who said I couldn't do certain things, and having to demystify those voices that I hear, not from a sense of a mental illness, but the sense of saying that I have to be able to hold myself accountable to know the things that I can and cannot do. And then also stop trying to make up for lost time for the things I didn't have when I didn't have it. So I'm overcompensating now. So that's my way is prayer and that spirit of discernment and asking God to continue to keep me sane and keep me whole as possible.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Patrice.
And for me, it's really been having awareness around how I respond emotionally and how my body responds in certain situations. So one big trigger for me that really led to more boundary setting was that I would wake up and have literally like 10 text messages from people. No one said good morning. No one said, how are you? But people were asking me legal questions by text. And it would make me literally so angry that I would be physically shaking because I felt, you know, how dare you not ask how I'm doing? How dare you, you know, think that the first order of business for my day is to, you know, provide a free service to you. And so I really had to kind of check myself. And it came from someone telling me, it's not their responsibility to uphold your boundaries for you. It's your responsibility. And I had actually seen it the other way because I would say, well, I would never. It doesn't matter. And so that was really the starting point for me when I realized, okay, why are you getting so angry? Is it because they're doing something? And it was, no, I was not upholding my own boundaries. And so my boundary that came from that, which, you know, Savannah, my phone lives on do not disturb, so that I control when I go in and receive those messages from people. And that's been huge for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Jada.
Yes, what Dr. Jones just said, self-accountability, I think it's a balance between discernment, yes, and then, you know, we're here in the flesh. So it's like, for me, what I do to help myself is I write lists down. And so even if it's like the beginning of this week, I knew I wanted to prep for a panel and I knew I wanted to write down all of the points. And I know that I want to take the business to a nonprofit. And it's so I think that everything and tasks as strong women and especially business owners, and when you're striving for things in life, everything has tiers. People think it's just one thing and then you check it off. But everything probably has a checklist of like 5 or 10 small things. And then there's 3 people that you have to interact with through those 5 things. So I think giving ourselves grace and writing it down so that you can see what it is you're doing, crossing those things off. And then, yes, we're not superwoman. We are not God. We are not meant to get all of these things done. But when you look at the progress of like, okay, I've wanted to create a business since I graduated college in 2019, like those lists got me somewhere. So I think everybody just, yes, having discernment of what it is, listening to the voice and the things that you've prayed on, also making a point of what it is that you're focusing on a lot of times can alleviate a lot of different stress and pressures, in my opinion.
This girl just said she graduated college in 2019. Come on, somebody. You are a very wise baby on this panel.
Okay. Thank you.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Oh my gosh. Yes. I love it. You actually brought up a point that I want you to talk further on earlier on the intro of this talk was we're all strong in different ways, or you can be strong in a myriad of ways. Explain what are some of those ways that individuals can find their actual fortitude where they're not putting themselves in a box of what society say they have to be or how they have to show up to be a strong woman.
Yes. This is comical. I think, first of all, for every strong person, you need a therapist. Like, that's just my opinion. I started probably a month ago with a therapist and starting again and went to go see one of her colleagues last week. And we were kind of unwrapping and unraveling my personality. And she told me that I was reactive. And I was like, okay, you know, like, and she's like, well, why do you feel like you have to do that? And I'm like, well, if I'm sitting here and this person is getting mistreated and if we're standing in a line at Walmart and you see maybe example of today's climate, a white woman just steps in front of you and disregards everything that you have. Well, I'm the one who will stand behind the woman who got cut off and ask, what is your problem? Why would she do that? And it's like, react. Why do you think that you were sent to save everybody? Right. Like I think that we don't realize sometimes strength is silence. Sometimes strength is speaking up, but you don't have to yell. Sometimes strength is just sitting and being there. And so it's like, who do you allow in your space that you want to be strong for when they need it? If we start and go back to those lists of what matters to me between my business, my family, this relationship, my kids, you know, if it doesn't concern those categories, I can't be for everybody. And so I think strong in different ways is recognizing that you can't be strong for everybody. It's not your job to be strong for everybody and not your job to really react. I'm learning a lot in my youth of reacting versus response. So strong in different ways is just, I think, what that situation needs for who you're caring about, what that person needs. Because when we get invested and involved with different people, like what I need to be strong might not be what Dr. Jones or Patrice needs to be strong. It's just recognizing and being able to respond versus react to everything around you.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Patrice, you work with some amazing creatives. And a lot of your clients are women that I know of. But they are at the top of their game. Do you think that they fit the, not necessarily the stereotype, but the descriptive definition somewhat of strong woman? And do you think that has helped them to actually break some of the barriers in their industry?
Absolutely. I think that strong woman has worked in phases for them. And so it's looked different ways depending on the stage of their career that they're at. And so for most of my clients, I think strong woman, being a strong woman initially meant they did it all, they conquered it all, they said yes, year of yes, right? So they said yes to all of the opportunities that appeared to be aligned. And then everyone kind of went through this period where it was like, wait a minute, I feel burnout approaching. I need to pull back. And pulling back looked like exercising more discernment, saying no more often, building the team around them, trusting others more to lead. And so I've seen them go through these waves, which has required me to support them in different ways, even though I'm just their attorney. But there have been times where I've said, let me do this for you, because I see that a certain thing causes a different level of stress for them. And so I would say it's been a huge blessing for me to have been blessed with a largely female clientele and have seen these waves, because we honestly have learned from each other. We have conversations that are tied to the business, but not where we just check in. And I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, that's good. I think of the women who not only are carrying a lot at home or on their side jobs, but they're also considered corporate heroes. And generally, I will say this, from what I know and from being a Black woman myself, I do a lot. Like when there's a task that is given, I approach that task and I may do more than what the task requires. Most women do that on the day to day. And especially if they are working for a corporation, they are probably doing or handling responsibilities that are actually outside their job title. So how can women in the workplace create or maintain proper boundaries while also saying, I'm not here, like you said, Jade, I'm not here to save you. Dr. Jones, you said, you know, you have to take off your cape. You're not the one billing or making the millions of dollars, whatever your corporation is bringing in, but you're being required to do X amount of workload that is over and above what your responsibilities are, but not paying you at the rate that you deserve. So how can these women say, look, I may look strong to you, I may be considered strong, but here's the line. How can I do that?
I actually am working corporate right now. And I had this conversation with my manager the other week. And I think a lot of times corporate is so much higher up than we would recognize and you don't see the people that are making these decisions. And I think something I often talk about in my household is a tax. Like there's a tax that Black people have on them, and then there's a tax that women have. So we're Black and women, so it's doubled. And so you're always trying to like prove yourself and prove that you belong. And one thing that I can appreciate about the generation that I've come up in is like, we don't have to prove anything to you anymore. We've done it. We built it and we're here. And so I had a conversation with my manager because I've been an employee that constantly was going above and beyond and doing certain things, but I'm watching people come in at the same job as me, get signing bonuses that, you know, we're not getting as being employed. My pay even was not like the right, it wasn't the right pay for like 6 to 8 months. Nobody's, you know, of course, like I'm looking, but I'm working, but management, nobody's addressing that. And so it's like, why, I asked my manager, why would I be myself and who I am and go above and beyond when employee A and employee B can come in and clock in and do their things and go, and you're not even looking to them to do anything else. You're not even having these conversations with them. And so I think like a lot of times that reactive gene in a lot of us, and just the need to want to tell somebody off and go back at them and say, well, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. Well, a lot of times I think that you can lay out the facts. If this is what it is, this is what's required of me, and this is what I've done. And I think a lot of times if we start using this next generation's wave of confidence and being and comfort in who we are, who our ancestors brought us up to be, and knowing even if we just do the bare minimum, we're doing better. We're doing exactly what we're supposed to do because we've always been pushed to go an extra mile. But I think it's the tax that we have on ourselves. Our parents' fears sometimes are imposed on us. But I think there's like a comfort and a strength in just being who you are and showing up and knowing, like Dr. Jones said, that fit who's talking to me in the back of my head. Like a lot of times corporate America, and I think Americans in general, rely on that mental deficiency where people can't really tell between, you know, oh, I did do that. That is enough. You get in a rabbit race, you know, and you just kind of keep going. But it's on us to check in on our own strength, on us to say, hey, this matters. I do need this job to make X, Y, and Z, to make this business and this dream go. But I don't have to do all of these things because at the end of the day, corporate America is going to be corporate America.
Absolutely. I want to pull out some things for you guys to really think about based on what Jada was saying, because you show up and you do a lot of the work and then you show up with a great attitude as well for less pay. Currently in 2020, there was a study done on the pay gap versus women and men, and women are now getting paid 82 cents on the dollar that men are being paid, which is much more than what it was years ago. However, it's still not equal pay, right? But something has to happen for an individual for them to actually approach their superior and say, I deserve to have more in this role. I'm not just going to be your superwoman and do everything without being properly compensated. But there's an issue around confidence. There's also a study that was out there from HP where men in the workplace would apply for promotions even when they didn't have or meet all of the qualifications. But women will only apply when they met 100% of the qualifications. The only deciding factor is confidence. And so if we break that situation down, you know, let's say, okay, we broke it down by gender, but now what if we break that down based on a white woman versus a Black woman, right? Do we instinctively know the value that we have, that we bring to the table? I would say yes and no. Some of us know, but some of us are just, we have no idea. But even if we knew, can we exhibit the right form of confidence to demand equal pay or to demand whatever it is that we want to be compensated for all of that work and time?
That is a loaded question. But one of the things I'll say, even from a personal perspective, is that I had to learn to document the process. Especially most times when you think about restorative justice, people's mind typically navigate towards RJ being in education. But when you understand restorative justice as a way of life, I had to really just delve deeper into the academic knowledge that I've gained, as well as my life experience, so I could tie my two worlds together. And because of that, I've learned to be more confident now than ever before. And one of the main reasons why I've learned to be confident is because I have hope. I have something to look forward to. There were times in my life when I didn't have that or didn't believe I had that. And so therefore I went with the bare minimum and I stayed, you know, under the radar. But now I'm very outspoken in terms of with fidelity and integrity, because I document the process. And most times I'm creating these processes, and it's setting me apart from anyone else that says restorative justice. And so that confidence comes with the lack of confidence. I know what it's like to not have. I know what it's like to not be appreciated. I know what it's like, all the things that are unwarranted feelings and emotions, whether that's in the workplace or in life in general. And so that trauma that comes along with it will have you in a place where you're not confident, even when you know you have it, even when you know you got it. But until you resolve the unhealed part of you that says that you can go over and beyond and exceed your expectations, you will continue to work with the bare minimum. And so for me, is really working with that unhealed part of you that says that you can't.
That's good. What you think about that, Patrice?
That is such a great question. So early on, a woman by the name of Yanni Brown said something similar to me. She said that women negotiate, the way that women negotiate is reflective with their level of self-confidence. And it was something that I had never thought about, but resonated with me throughout my career. So because of that statement, I would actively push myself through discomfort, through lack of confidence, because I knew that just by default, I would negotiate in a way that was reflective of where I thought I should be. And as we've all said, we already know we're working harder, we're doing more, we're producing better, you know, work product and outcomes. Why shouldn't what we earn reflect that? And so I'll say this remains a struggle for me, to be honest. You know, as an advocate for my clients in negotiations, it's much easier for me to push them. And I do that, and I'm pushing them and I'm telling them to ask for more and I'm going hard for them. But when it comes to myself, it's still a daily struggle. And so what has helped for me is honestly having conversations with other friends who are in business, other attorneys. We have open and transparent conversations around what you charge, what are you producing, you know, for that particular rate. And so I think the transparency in conversation, and I will tell you, so I'm in a few different groups of colleagues, right? Groups of attorneys. Last year, I decided I was going to join an attorney group of white men. And I wanted to be there because I wanted to see what their conversations were like, right? And bring that back to my sisters. I wanted to see the things that they concern themselves with versus the things that they don't. I wanted to see what they're charging, how they stand behind it, if they're fretting over it, having the same worries. And when I tell you that, it's a whole different ball game over there. And so I think it's important for us to also kind of get ourselves in these different environments, because so much of what we're feeling is just embedded in us as Black women. It works for us a lot of times, but when we're talking about things like demanding, I don't even really love the phrase demanding your worth, because what does that really mean? But when we talk about negotiating and asking for more, I think it's important to broaden our reach and really step into other communities so that we can bring that insight back to our people as well.
I love that. And I love that you took the initiative to actually do that, because generally what we would do is wait for other people to invite us into their community, which doesn't ever really happen. Or at least it doesn't happen often. So, you know, you're still kind of left hanging out there wondering, okay, how do they deal with this? How do they do that? And there is something known as the Good Old Boys Club, which generally just speaks to older white men who have this full network. They pull their own people in, they teach them the ropes of everything, and they pass off the torch to each other. So when they come out in whatever field it is, they hit the ground running. But as you know, for us, if we're the first to do something in our industry, We're not hitting the ground running. We're constantly learning and trying to pull the next person up with us or along the, you know, the same lines of the journey so that we both can be successful at it. So it's definitely important that we take some advice from Patrice and go and insert ourselves into communities that can help us to think more diverse on certain issues and how to approach them. It may also give us key insight on issues that we may be missing in our own businesses or brands that can help us actually do better. So that leads me to a question about having new friends, because there's a song out there that says, I don't need new friends. But what if you are the strong friend? You are the strong friend who constantly checks on everybody else. You are the strong friend who follows up when you know things are going crazy for your friends. You are the one who is there holding the flowers, doing whatever it takes to really maintain that friendship or what you would want to be a strong relationship. But who's there for you, right? I know some of you on this panel have had to hear the words, girl, you good, you got it, you strong. You're strong. You're going to get through it. It's all good. You got it. But there's no callbacks. There's no checkups. Do we need new friends, especially for the strong friends?
I honestly believe we do ourselves a disservice if we live our lives believing that the people that have been on the journey with you from beginning to whatever point in time you may be are the only people that are supposed to be there. And I mean, if we even have to think about it from a biblical standpoint, everybody plays their part in terms of a season. At the same time, I think this is somewhat of a trigger for me because I actually lost someone, not due to death, but due to the fact that my life started to transition for the better. And I started to see things that I didn't want to see. And you have to learn how to meet people where they are. When you see things, you have to take it for what it is, even if it hurt. And one of the things for me, before I even, you know, stop talking for the moment, because I believe like this is like, oh, right. But I had to learn that when I asked God, when I prayed to God about removing me or removing people from my life, that I have to learn to be okay with the response, because it may not always be the person that you expect need to be removed. It's the people that you hold near and dear to your heart. But be able to do that in a way that allows you to still give him the glory, but also be able to keep your integrity in check, because everybody's not for the entire journey. They just play the part that they're supposed to play, just like we are supposed to do the same. So yes to new friends.
That's good. Y'all want to chime in on that? If not, I'll say a few words.
Yes, I think Dr. Jones wrote in the comments there something about just you'll never grow in your comfort zone. And so I think that is the same with friendships. I've had many friends that we've gone through school together, you know, not that far removed, but elementary, middle, high school, and some that kind of stick along the way. And it's like those people are good. The history is comforting, but you can't be the smartest person in the room, especially as business owners, as we try to grow and navigate getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. Like Patrice said, she went into a room of white men, you know, and white attorneys. Like, I grew up in a predominantly white environment, and the strengths that I think I adopted from that are the confidence to go into those rooms with them. And when you go in with confidence, you find that every last one of them, they're not all bigots. You know, some of them don't know what to say. Some of them want to know how to have that conversation. Some want to know how to help. So it's like you find when you make yourself uncomfortable, when you go places that you're not used to, or that that your friends probably wouldn't take you, you know. Like for my friends, we like hanging out south side of Atlanta. We do a certain number of things. We know who we're going to see. We know the environment that we're going to be around, and that's comfortable. But then there's a whole nother world if I go to the Battery, right? And like a whole, like they have games for us to play and like all of these things. So it's like, you don't know what you're going to be exposed to, what your inner child would react and respond to, and how you can keep growing that trauma, that person, and really developing your confidence through different people. People create experiences. And it's like that thing we talked about of boundaries, right? We write down like, okay, yes, I met this person. I'm reading Relational Intelligence right now. if we could, as those strong friends and as those strong women, start to place people where they need to be, you don't get disappointed in the white man who you met, because you know, that's my friend. John's going to show me how to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. John is going to show me or connect me with his boss who, you know, he didn't have. But you close yourself off, I think, if you allow yourself to think that it's going to be your day ones or the only people that you came into. And then another part of being that friend is like, I'm the one who wants my friends to elevate too, right? Like, you can't just be around me and be stagnant. We don't all have to be business owners. We don't all have to be starting our own thing, but definitely just environment, making sure that you're nurturing an environment for growth, and that's with everything.
These ladies said it all, but I'll just add that I am a fan of new friends. And one thing that I learned is that I had to create the space for them. When you're growing a business, especially, or a family, or whatever your situation might be, it's hard. I don't think the default mode is to have space for new people. And so I think that's something that I have had to learn to be intentional about. And because of that, intentionality, is that a word? Because of that, I have developed new friendships along the way that for me carry just as much value as the old friendships in different ways. And so I would encourage everybody just to create the space for those new friendships to develop.
Yep. And I'm glad you had space, honey, because I met Patrice at the Illinois State Bar Association. I was working as a production coordinator, and I'm that sister, right? When I see another sister, I'm like, oh, I got to know who you are. And we're the only two in a room. And mm-hmm. on top of that, I want to say it was probably predominantly white men that were there. Mm-hmm. So I went over and introduced myself to Patrice.
In a class on what? Negotiations.
It
was a master negotiations class, like yep. 8 years ago, I think.
I think it was about 8 years ago. And we connected, we stayed connected, and some years later, I reached back out to her, and we just rekindled and like really started to build this beautiful friendship and business relationship. And it's been amazing to have someone that you know you can call about business, but also about maybe some smaller personal issues that you're trying to figure out, how can I navigate this? But I want to touch on something that you guys said about having new friends, especially when you see yourself as the strong friend, the one who's always told that you can get over it, but you don't have other people to check in on you. It's so important that you have people in your space who will technically love on you, like motivate you, talk, let you vent on the phone, whatever that thing may be that you are for other people. One thing I recognize by having that space, like you said, Patrice, of new friends, the pandemic was so vital for me for that. That's how I met Dr. Jones. That's how I met some other amazing women who, without question, without any form of hint from me, just sending something like, hey, I hope you're doing okay. Or how are you? I haven't talked to you in however long. For me, that's so different. It's a new feeling because I'm the strong friend. I'm the one that's checking in, you know, often on other people. And so you definitely want to make sure you have that community. And as Dr. Jones said, that reciprocity, because it's tiring and you don't want to put a third tax on yourself, pulling that from Jada. You don't want to put another tax on yourself where you are emotionally, physically drained, and mentally, and sometimes spiritually drained from being that strong friend for other people when they are not there for you. And I've had this conversation many of times before, like, why don't people check in on me? Like, what's wrong with me? But it's not that it's something wrong with me. It's the fact that they have this idea that I have a level of resilience that is unmatched to anyone else, which is so far from the truth, right? Your strong friends still need that mental support. And so if you consider yourself to be that strong friend and you're not getting that from the community of people that you have right now, you need to hold space and open up space for individuals who are capable of supporting you through whatever it is that you are going through. Definitely want to want to add that for sure, for sure. Yeah. And some relationships just like fizzle out. Talk about spiritual things, Dr. Jones. People are seasons, right? Some folks are there for literally a moment, and some people are there for a lifetime. And you start to recognize who those people were. But the good thing about it is, if you can remove yourself from thinking on, oh, well, why didn't this person show up for me this way? Or why didn't they do that person in the way that they did show up for you in that moment can teach you something, but you have to be mentally aware and sometimes spiritually aware to recognize whatever that lesson was in that moment, right? Because sometimes we could move into our next relationship, whatever it may be, and repeat the exact same thing or pull the exact same person in that does not serve us or our greater good because we haven't learned the first lesson. So recognize that people and relationships can be there for certain seasons, but it's up to you to recognize what the lesson is that you need to take from it so that you are not beating yourself down in a position where you cannot step up for yourself, which is something that is self-preservation, right? If you ever taken flights, we hear all the time, make sure that you secure your mask before helping someone else. But generally strong friends help other people before they help themselves, right? And then you are depleted. I've been there, I've done that. And so what does that look like for you? How do you set those boundaries like we've been talking about? How do you say no? Because sometimes it's hard to say no to the people that we love. So let's talk about saying no for a second. Because if you're a parent, let me tell you, my four-year-old, that's like all he knows. No, no, no. He tells me no. But I can't really get on him because that's like the only word I use for him. No, no, you can't do it. You can't have it. But why is it so hard for us to tell our friends and other people that we love that, no, I can't do this. I don't have the space for you. I don't have the capacity for you. I don't have the moments for you to call and just vent about whatever it is that you're going on, have gone on. Because guess what's happening for the strong friend? They're up here. All of their stuff keeps rising and there's no release for it. So how do we say no?
I know one of the reasons why we don't say no, which goes back to that unhealed part of us. If for any reason you associate your relationships with people by what you can do for them and not necessarily what they could do for you, then there's no reciprocity. And you may have been taught to always give, but no one taught for you to receive. And so that's one thing. The other thing is too, is that I kind of like use the social discipline window, which is one of the things I use as a diagram when I'm speaking about restorative justice. And in that top right-hand quadrant of the social discipline window, it talks about doing things with people to empower them, not to enable. Then the other three parts talks about doing things to people to be punitive, doing things for people to pacify them and enable them, and then doing nothing at all to neglect them as if they don't exist, which is a form of being dehumanized. So if you do all you can to stay in that top right-hand quadrant, learn how to do things with people, the first thing you have to learn how to do is learn how to do things with yourself. And so it's hard to decipher what you need when you don't know who you are. Because if you don't know who you are, then you don't know what you need. And then therefore, people do whatever they will to you. And most times you will take that for what it is because you have no inclination to stop and say no. So you've become that yes woman or that yes man. And so I think it really goes back to just that unhealed part of you. You got to check yourself.
Yes, I 100%. I was going to say, I think that a lot of times we say yes, and I know for myself, it's a lack of confidence. And then it's a lack of just trusting the path that you're on, right? Like if you go back to that list of like, these are the things that I said I wanted to do. Well, somebody calling me with an issue about their website or a sponsorship deck they needed or whatever that looks like, that has nothing to do with, I just got my nonprofit signed or this, that, the third. And it definitely doesn't have anything to do with my family, my friends or any, you know what I mean? So it's like, if we go back to one, I like to reflect self. And so that journeying onward, establishing self-awareness for the athlete, and that is your unhealed trauma. That is, you know, your feelings, what you like, what you don't like, and detach all of that from sport, right? And it's like, what do I need? This doesn't contribute to what I need. This doesn't contribute to what I want. And I'm okay with that person not understanding that. I'm okay with that person being upset with me, because in the long run, I think if they do the work that they're supposed to do, they'll recognize later why I said no. Because I've gotten mad at people and then gone back in my own head and been like, you know, that wasn't them. That had nothing to do with them. And I think as a society, as the strong friend, as women, if we just start to reflect on self, if we start to look at each situation and how our own trauma or how our, because everybody's experiences are shaping them for where they are right now. So if you have that friend that's not that confident and didn't go in all of those rooms and stayed with the people that she's known, you know, from being younger, she doesn't know anything outside of loyalty. She doesn't know really what loyalty means. She thinks that it means everything that you need, almost in a form of abuse is what she sees as loyalty. Mm-hmm. So it's like, just because you are in that space, it's not my job as the strong friend or as somebody that you recognize in your life of value, you know, because a lot of times people see in us what we don't, and us saying no is not a reflection of anything for them, it's for us, you know, but they're taking it personally because people are takers and they want to take what you have because they're looking outside in. So I think going back to like what Dr. Jones said of, this is me, this is what I have going on, writing down your list so that you can see it visually. You have to write down the people in your life that matter. If you have to write down the things in your life, and if that goes month to month, and you're writing what those focuses are, when outliers or different situations come that you are tested with, hopefully you'll be able to have the right response after seeking within.
So Jada mentioned earlier this tendency to be reactive. And so the way that my no got easier is that I pause when people ask me for something and I reflect, because before my no used to be the default, I mean, my yes used to be the default answer, right? So I found that when I paused and then when I thought about, well, why am I saying yes to this? What I decided was that as long as I liked my reason for saying yes, then I would say yes. But if I would say yes because it was out of fear, pressure, because I didn't want them to react in another way, then that wasn't a good enough reason. So I paused. And if that pause leads me to a no, then I'm good there. The other thing is thinking about, we're all trading off time for something, right? And so thinking about what am I trading off to give them this yes? If that trade-off is not worth it for me, then I'm going to say no. And so, again, this continues to be a daily practice for me. I've gotten a lot more comfortable in my no's, and it's really because I pause and I reflect, you know. And what I'll say is that it doesn't work out for anyone if we say yes and we don't mean it, because we're bitter through the process, we experience resentment, whatever we're giving the other person is not received in the proper spirit because we didn't have the spirit to provide in the first place. And so we're really not benefiting people by saying yes all the time. And the other thing that I've learned is that we have to preserve ourselves in order to even be here and serve other people. So if I'm constantly saying yes to everyone, that leaves me with nothing for me, which means that whatever you get of me is just the worst version of it that I could possibly give you. And so that doesn't serve you or me. So the no has gotten a lot more comfortable, but it's still daily practice.
You ladies are like so phenomenal. And Patrice, now that you say it, you actually do that. Because I'm like thinking back to our conversations. I'm like, she actually does pause. And then she says like whatever her answer is. I love it. We had a few more people join. And Kimberly, she says, yes, like, what am I trading off? We had a gentleman join. He says, hi, Jada. And also Whitney, she said, Doc, you need to go ahead and just pass the collection plate, honey, because you were killing it. You were killing it. But you ladies definitely hit on some major points. One of you said other people, I think it was you, Jada, they see the value in us. So people always can see on the outside looking in. And sometimes they know the value we have, but we just haven't come accustomed or have accepted that we are as good as other people know us to be. And it puts us in a position where individuals can take advantage of us, right? But when you know better, you do better. So what that means for your friendships, if you are that strong friend, they know that you have or you will provide a space for all of their stuff, right? almost like, oh my gosh, what's the girl's name? Erykah Badu, I think. Bag Lady. Bag Lady. Yep. You're going to miss your bus because you're carrying too much stuff, right? Because you don't have any space for yourself whatsoever. And so that's when it's necessary for you to prioritize your relationships. Who is also there for you? Because you said, Dr. Jones, relationships, it's a give and take. It needs to be reciprocity there. So if your friendships are not giving you anything, then you need to demand what it is that you need. And it's okay to say that. It's okay to speak that. I recognize that there are some relationships I had in the past where I didn't speak up. I was just mad. But you can't be mad at somebody if you haven't even communicated why you're upset. They're only doing what you've allowed them to do, which was take, 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 take. So if you want to receive something, now we need to learn how to let go of that cape of trying to save everybody else and start to save ourselves, right? Put our capes on for ourselves and demand what it is that we need in our relationships. And it's okay to do that. You're not going to be a bad person for doing that. But I do believe that especially Black women have been, I don't want to say groomed because I feel like it's just such a bad word, but I feel like, you know, our upbringing, our history, we have been taught that we need to give to everybody. That's to our significant others, to our children, to our jobs, our clients, you know, and it can get to a point where if you have not properly carved out that time or what it is that you need to give those things, you are putting yourself in a bad position where that so-called strongness that you have, it will fade away and it will put you in a position where you are going to have to seek necessary professional health. That could be mental health. That could be a medical physician. Let me share a story with you guys really quick, and I'm not going to be long, but this was one time in my life when I recognized I can't worry about everybody else. It is what it is. I'm done. Cannot worry about everybody else. I was going through this transition in my life. I was getting ready to graduate from law school, studying for the bar and planning my wedding. But there was a whole bunch of crap around like the wedding and other stuff that was coming up. Long story short, I ended up in the hospital with stomach ulcers. And my boyfriend then, or fiance then, my husband, sitting there in the bed, he said, babe, you stress too much. Of course, there was stress from studying for the bar, but there was also other outside stressors. Like, why do certain family not show up for me on things that are great achievements for me in my life, right? Why are friends not here when they're supposed to be here and I've been there for them? All of that is compiled on from me being that strong one for everybody else. But even in the good times, people couldn't show up for me, right? I wasn't demanding exactly what it was that I needed. And I made a vow to myself that day. I'm not worrying about nobody else. I'm worrying about Savannah. It's all about me. Because here I am, a young woman with stomach ulcers at that time. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but stomach ulcers. And all of that stress manifested itself physiological. And it could have been something way worse than that. Thank God that it wasn't. But we don't want to wait till we get to the point where we have a psychological or physiological breakdown to recognize that we don't have to be strong for everybody. And in fact, we don't even have to be strong for ourselves. We are human, and it is okay to need another shoulder to cry on, to want to vent on the phone to somebody else, to just lay in our bed maybe sometimes and cry it out. Like, whatever it is, you don't have to be strong, right? But we all do have our own individualized strengths. So don't allow society, don't allow your family, don't allow your friends to define what your strengths are. You can define those for yourselves. So we are wrapping up on our time, guys. Do you all have anything else that you want to add to this panel today? And I'll let you guys go if you do, and then we'll start closing it out.
I do. So I just want to add that in the conversation about strong friends, a lot of times, well, I'll speak for myself personally. Most of my friends are moms and they're married, and there's a different level of, I think, being strong that's required for those relationships. And I think that most of us know that. But don't forget about your strong single friends. Because during the pandemic, since you brought that up, Savanya, that was a time that it became even clearer to me just how much support that the strong single friends needed. There was a time in my life, I'm the strong single friend, a time in my life where I could literally disappear and people would know, like you could not talk to me for 2 weeks. And it was because I was going through it. But when you have that perception of being the strong friend, people don't really check on you. And so I just want to leave everyone with, don't forget about your strong single friends, because it's easy for them to hide.
That's good. That's really good. Because you know what? When I stopped calling everybody else, my phone like barely rung. The only person calling me was my husband. That's it. And I'm like, dang, where y'all at? Where are y'all at? So get you some new friends. what you about to say, Jada?
I was just going to say, just recapping for everybody, remember to just define your boundaries, tap in with yourself, and then remember you define your own strength. Don't let anybody else define that for you. Like for me today, I'm like, oh, I was going to go work out at 3 and I don't have to do that. So it's like little things. We think it's always these very big, grandiose gestures, because I think social media, I think society has us thinking that, and even just like you said, our parents and the way that we've been conditioned and raised, we think life has to be this big, grandiose gesture. But I think everybody remembering to define it for yourself and take baby steps with yourself and be patient will get you a long way. So, and then just thank you for the opportunity.
You are welcome. Dr. J?
I would just say the same amount of grace and compassion and empathy that we so freely give to others, be able to do the same, if not more, for ourselves.
Yep. Yes, yes, yes. So true. Kimberly, she stated that she's a strong single mom of 7, 6 adults now, but who still think I'm the strong mom, right? And of course your kids do. We are the first line of defense to everything. So our kids definitely think that we are strong, but it's important to also let them know that, hey, sometimes mommy needs a little grace too, or daddy needs some little grace. I just want to thank you all so much for joining this panel to talk about a very necessary topic and conversation to check on your strong friends. If you have commented on this broadcast today, made any form of statements, if you've shared this, if you haven't, go ahead and share it again with your people, because they need to know this. But we just want to say thank you for really joining a serious conversation. We don't talk about our strong friends enough, and we don't check on our strong friends enough. So at the end of this broadcast, I want you to be intentional, and I want you to call at least 3 of your strong friends. Call or text or voice note, hey, you good? Just want to make sure you're alive out there, right? So yeah, guys, thank you so much for joining today. Check on your strong friends. I am Savanya DeBarros, a protector of athletes. And as always, it is my pleasure, my honor to educate you and motivate you to your very next level. Until next time, guys, we'll check you later. Ciao.
Thanks for joining us this week on What Are You Sporting About podcast. Make sure to visit our website, prosportlawyer.com, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite platform is, so you'll never miss a show. And while you're at it, if you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or iHeartRadio. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like the show, you might want to check out our book, What Are You Sporting About? Attorney Savanya DeBarros is available for private consulting at sldebarros.com. And remember, we're here to educate, support, and guide you in your journey to success, because we're all sporting about something.